Everyone has a story, and we all learn lessons through our experiences. In Bubble Wrap, you will hear lessons learned through our engaging interviews that are applicable to business, communications, and Christianity. Today on Bubble Wrap, a mother's worst nightmare.
I feared for his life. I feared that he would potentially take his own life in desperation.
This show is for all people who want to grow professionally and spiritually. I'm your host, Kristen Getzey.
Welcome to the Bubble Wrap. I am very excited to be launching our podcast and beginning with not only a fellow sister in Christ, but also a dear friend of mine who is an author, a blogger, and someone I've known for, a lot of years. So I'd like to introduce you guys to Carissa Moore. Hi, Carissa.
Hello. Glad to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us here on a Bubble Wrap today. Our subject matter is a deep one, but I know that not only do you have a wealth of knowledge and information, but I know your heart and your mind, and you've got a lot of details to give us about the subject of depression and the subject of suicide. Before we jump into the heavy topic, let's do a little bit about get to know Carissa. So first of all, Carissa lives in Northern Kentucky. Near me. We've also attended the same church for quite a while and kind of run in the same social circles. And I have been fortunate enough to know Carissa and her son, Jonathan, who committed suicide.
He was 18. He had just turned 18.
And that happened back in 2014. But Carissa's everyday sense has committed her life to turning the page. She has used that as her marching orders. And she's continuing to write her own story. Additionally, she is working through some deep grief in regards to her son's passing, as would anyone. But she's also using that as a tool to help other people. So getting to know Carissa, I have what we call the lightning round. Dun, dun, dun. So it's a list of 15 questions, and it's a get to know you type of thing. So let's talk about it. You ready, Carissa?
Ready.
Number one, your marital status.
Married.
Number two, worst job ever.
Babysitting a boy that was 2 years younger than me and getting tied up.
Literally?
Literally. I think I was there to protect him from his brother.
You did not do a good job.
I did not. I was young.
Best job ever.
Working at the library and getting to read books first.
What is your favorite movie?
Finding Nemo.
And why? I'm just curious.
Because there are so many lessons. I gleaned so many lessons, and you'll even see him show up on my blog.
Okay. And who is your favorite actor?
I would have to say Sandra Bullock.
Favorite musical artist?
Toby Mac.
Yeah. Best concert you've ever attended?
It is Casting Crowns.
Great concerts.
They put on a good show.
They do. And your hobbies?
I love to take hikes and do photography.
Favorite holiday?
Probably Easter.
Yeah. Favorite time of the year?
Fall.
Why?
I love the change of the colors. And actually, since my son's death, it's come to have an even deeper meaning because I've started to see it as a time of renewal. That everything is, kind of fading and dying, and we'll feed things the next year.
Best gift ever.
My very first porcelain doll when I was 13.
Oh, I bet you still have it, don't you?
I do.
Worst gift ever.
I don't think I have a worst gift ever.
Who gives you the best advice?
Most of my advice comes from scripture, but I would say here late, it's been especially my husband.
And favorite color?
Green.
When is your birthday?
It just happened, May 24th.
And give me this, a little known fact that people might be shocked that they find out about you.
Well, I once had to do a writer's journal, and they asked the question, if you had an alter ego, what would it be? And when I answered the questions, I ended up describing a biker chick.
Well,
can you see me on the back of a Harley?
I can't. Even crazier being on the front of the Harley. Okay.
There you go. Yeah.
Favorite quote or scripture?
It would be Philippians 4, 6, and 7. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests before God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your heart and mind in Christ Jesus.
I think in your story, and that we progress a little bit later today, you're going to be able to share how you have been able to apply that.
Oh, so yes.
I'm sure we'll come back to that. Who mentors you, and is it like a formal mentorship or informal?
So I joined a Word Weavers group a couple years ago, and it has been so highly valuable. They have been helping me immensely develop my second book and just become great friends and kind of help me to step out of my comfort zone and step a little bit more into what God has for me because they're a part of my life.
Okay, do you have some crazy embarrassing moment that you want to share with us? Something very embarrassing, and then just tell us how you survived it.
So several years ago, not long after I moved to Kentucky, I loved rollerblading. But I wasn't quite as young as I used to be, so it wasn't as easy. And I wasn't as familiar with the train here. When I lived in Florida, I could just skate forever and have no trouble. But somebody mentioned, you know, there was a trail over in Ohio. Well, I thought, because I was somewhat familiar with, they were talking about the Little Miami. And so I get there and I see that it's got kind of some hills, but I'm going, I've skated hills before. I can handle that. Not this hill. It kept going down and then it went around a bend and into the woods. And yeah, it wasn't pretty. So as I started to go down, I realized I couldn't stop. So it's a gorgeous day. There's all kinds of people on the trail. Like they're coming up. Somebody's walking their happy dog up towards me and I'm screaming the whole way, get out of the way. I can't stop. And so finally, when I get down to a little bit of a flatter spot, I realize it's either I stop now or I don't stop at all. And so I went out into the grass, went a good solid, you know, a couple hundred yards and landed on my butt. And I was okay, no bruise, lots of laughter and thanking God that I survived that. But I did split my shorts. So it was what it was. And so now I have this lovely memory of, being in my early 30s, trying to rollerblade down a hill.
Well, maybe that's not this next question answer. Share a moment where you laugh so hard your sides hurt.
I would have to say that when I went to the movie theater when I was visiting my friend in West Virginia, and it was super late. We went to see the last showing of something. And I can't even remember what we watched. But when we came out, of course, as always, my shoelaces had come undone. And so I set my purse down and I tied my shoe. But when I went to pick up my purse and started to walk forward, I couldn't. Because I had tied my strap of my purse into my shoelaces. And my friend had already, not knowing any of this was happening, had already kind of walked forward. And so I started chasing after her with my strap still attached to my shoes, going, wait! And we laughed. I mean, our sides hurt so bad from laughing so hard.
All right. I'm wondering if these two kind of go together. Share a moment you cried so hard you didn't know how you were going to survive.
Oh, even before Jonathan died, just a lot of knock down, drag out on my knees, sobbing for his well-being, sobbing for God to do something. That is the most I've cried.
So I think maybe if I ask you this next question, it kind of is a good springboard into our topic for today. So if you can, take us back to a time where you had a life-changing, life-altering story that occurred in your life.
So one of the first most altering changes was actually becoming pregnant with my oldest son, Jonathan. When I became an adult at first, I totally melted down. and started self-destructing, became anorexic, was drinking all the time. Just, I was a mess. When I became pregnant with my son, it suddenly became not just about me, it became about another person. And I realized I had, you know, a choice to make. I had upbringing in the church, knew who Jesus was, knew who God was, really had never stopped believing that he existed. I just didn't like him. And I was like, I can keep going this route and I'm going to drag somebody else along, or I can make a different choice. And so while I was still pregnant with him, I began to make another choice and then another choice. And it was so interesting because it was almost like God and heaven were kind of like holding back and waiting for me to decide I'd had enough. And when I did, you know, I threw up my hands and I said, I've made a mess of everything. What can you do with this? And God just poured it out. He's like, let me show you. And he just provided for me again and again in so many mighty ways.
You lost Jonathan in 2014 to suicide.
Correct.
And every day since then, I know that you've said you committed, and I like your phraseology here, and there's a reason behind it. You've committed to turning the page and continuing to write your story. And you like to offer that next page as part of the testimony that you use to live an abundant life and share that with others. And I too know that you are an extreme introvert. So God's calling on your life is one of those sort of like when Moses was called and he said, I'm not enough.
Yep. I have to fight it every day. Had to fight it yesterday.
If you will, let's start first with the beginning of your story. If you can take us back, give us a little bit of background about Jonathan and the lead up to it.
So Jonathan was born at 10 pounds, 10 ounces. So he was like practically born at 3 months, turned over for the first time in 3 days. Like, oh, wow. He was one strong little dude. And, you know, it was amazing. It was like God grew me even as this little child was growing and maturing, and he was fun and like challenging, of course. But just also a joy. I really enjoyed being a mom. When he got to be about 15 months, he had already been, you know, walking pretty well since a year. But he suddenly started limping and reverted back to crawling at times. Took him to the doctor. By the time they saw him, he was just walking normally. And, you know, they just call it a fluke. Well, that kept happening. And when he got to be about 3, he woke up screaming in pain one night. And I took him to the emergency room. And again, they can't find anything. And this just kept happening over and over and over again. You know, we started to kind of pick up a pattern. I could predict like when these episodes were going to happen because they had precursors. But again, nobody could figure out what was happening. And Jonathan was getting very tired of getting poked and prodded. So, you know, we decided to kind of try to maintain things the best we could. And, you know, just wait. This is before they've done a lot of works on genes at this point. And so there's a lot of things that they've discovered, since this was 96. So since then, that they didn't know back then. When he got older, he would still have those episodes as long as we could kind of maintain his diet, keep stress down to, a minimum, then, he was, you know, able to do okay, you know, but when he hit puberty, everything shifted. It began not just being this pain in his legs and these crazy little off the wall things, it started to move upwards and started to affect his brain. You know, more testing done, more doctor visits, and, you know, nobody could really get a pinpoint on these episodes. They started increasing in nature, and obviously stress was a major factor, and he had a ton of that. And he was also wanting to be typical young man, play sports. He played lacrosse. He took a couple bad hits. He had his first concussion when he was a freshman. And then another one, we believe, just before his final days. By his junior year, he was just not himself. He was struggling to get up and down stairs. He was in constant pain, couldn't eat well, couldn't keep food down. Like, there was just all kinds of things just going haywire. And, you know, as a mom, the desperation that I felt trying to help him, trying to get people to, you know, take what was happening to him seriously and help him. It was just one obstacle after another, and it was exhausting. Whenever he was headed into his senior year, he had such a severe episode. It shifted his thinking. He started hallucinating. It was just a nightmare for that entire senior year. It was like I had a different child. Jonathan had always been friendly to people. He had always been for the underdog. He would defend people. He was just a sweet, constant guy. He was one that would invite the outsiders in. But I think sometimes he struggled with not feeling like he was being invited in. And I think that, you know, that made things worse. And he actually ended up pulling away from us as a family. And that was so hard and so painful. But I realized that I had to trust God and let him go, that I was eating myself alive, that I was not going to be any good for him or anybody else trying to fix it all the time. I just opened my hands and said, God, he's yours. And trusted him. And those last few months were probably the best I could have been because of that decision. Not easy. He still wasn't well. I still, you know, would say, you know, you need to see a doctor, you need to follow through, you need to do these things. But it was the best it could have been in the circumstances.
Were these all signs of depression?
No, you know, some of them, yes. I feared for his life. I feared that he would potentially take his own life in desperation. So that was always in the back of my mind. The way I describe it to his brother and sister is it's kind of like having a stroke when parts of your brain just don't function right. And that, you know, sometimes you do things that are just kind of off. You know, I don't think he had just, on some parts of it, I don't think that he had control over what was happening to him. And so, you know, therefore, I just don't think he could even make a positive decision or, you know, in trying to take care of himself. Some of them, yes. I mean, there was clearly that element, but then there's also, you know, clear elements that he wanted to live life to the fullest. And that's kind of the thing about depression is people kind of assume that those that are depressed want to die. That's not it. They want to live. They just want to live without whatever it is that is overwhelming them so much.
What are some of the signs, if you will, that we can look out for?
So if you have seen the movie Inside Out, mm-hmm. it actually came out just after Jonathan died. My husband and I went to see it, and we bawled our eyes out. Because in that movie, they have the islands of this little girl of, you know, as she's growing, these are the things that bring her stability and are part of her character and her nature. And they're built up, but there comes a shift when her family has to move that those began to crumble. Those began to change. And as we were watching each of the islands crumble in the movie, my husband and I looked at each other and we were like, that was Jonathan. I mean, that is what we watched happen. each of those little islands that kind of made him who he is, and who like helped him to kind of step out in himself when he had bad moments, like those all began to crumble. He pulled away from them. He pulled away from friendships. He pulled away from us. Like there just was that lack of input and security.
So you, as a caretaker of someone wrestling with mental illness, how do you yourself keep healthy?
That is an incredibly important question. I think one, you have to do what I explained, what I was telling the story is, you know, realize you're not going to be any good for anyone if you're falling apart. So you have to take that time to take care of yourself, to rest, to exercise, to take walks, to pray, to be fed yourself so that your own, you know, support system is not crumbling, or you're pulling away from. I think that we have this mindset that we just have to give and give and give and give and give, and you just simply can't. No human being can. So it is so important for you to say, I need a moment, you know, and when possible to have other people that can step in. But my husband has become so good at that, of, you know, kind of stepping in with the littles, or, you know, stepping in the situation where he sees me just kind of getting overwhelmed, and just saying, just back up for a little bit. She'll be able to re-engage the world. Just give her some space for a little bit.
And also reaching out to those who can support you, whether it's yes. mentally, physically, or emotionally.
Yes. The church. So one of the things that I realized after Jonathan died, I kind of was, I was doing that thing of, you know, I wanted to make sure that his friends knew that their lives were valuable. So I was just kind of putting everything out there of just, you know, this is how I'm green with hope. This is how I'm, you know, choosing to live life to the fullest. But about February, so he died in July, and about February, I realized I was getting sapped. And even though I wasn't in jeopardy of losing my faith, the quality of it had deteriorated greatly. And so I sought counseling at that point. And having someone outside, you know, of the circumstances is so important. You know, we need people that kind of see the bigger picture, because we tend to get so focused on those minute details.
Well, because we are friends and we've known each other for many years, and I did know Jonathan, who was, he was one of the youth in our church, and he helped out with my kids when they were little, and he was just a beautiful delight. I know that when Jonathan committed suicide, I was in the Dominican with a group from church, and we received the call. And what I can say is everyone grieves differently. We were all obviously in complete shock. No one was expecting anything like that. And Jonathan was very beloved in our community. When we come to talk about grief, people grieve in different ways. Would you like to talk to that?
Absolutely. That is such an important detail. And I want to especially emphasize that for married situations, because losing a child to suicide tends to tear marriages apart very, very easily and very quickly. You know, whatever you were struggling with beforehand gets magnified. So it becomes incredibly important that you first of all recognize that your spouse is going to grieve differently, that others, your children. So I have two other children who were 5 and 7 whenever Jonathan died. They grieve totally different. And so you have all these people grieving, and oftentimes in the same household, grieving in different ways. And so it's so important that you, first of all, give permission to people for people to grieve differently, but then also to like engage one another. So, you know, to some extent, I was trying to keep my grief separate from the kids so that, you know, they weren't so greatly affected by how deep I was feeling things. And I had a hospice counselor actually say, they need to see it. They need to see you grieve. and they need to know that you're grieving, because that's one of the ways that they connect of like, it's okay for me to grieve too. It's okay for me to express that outwardly. So that's important. That's hard. That's a hard one for me. But it is important, and it's changed the dynamic between my kids and I. We've had some really good conversations even recently about Jonathan's death and kind of where they are at right now. My husband in particular, it was interesting because he immediately went into, let's take care of all the financial affairs, all the things that surrounded Jonathan technically. I didn't like it. In fact, it made me mad. And I was starting to kind of react to that because I'm like, I don't want to deal with any of that. I don't want to deal with any of that. And God kind of reached in when I said, because I think I even said that out loud. And God kind of reached in and he goes, Carissa, don't you think he knows that? He knows you don't want to deal with any of that. And so he's trying to take that off of your plate and you need to let him. And it was that moment, you know, it stopped being the way he was grieving was butting my head. Like it was, I get it. This is how he's grieving. And there were times, someone else would vocalize to him, you know, hey, I've had a loss. And he would cry with them. And I had not seen that before. And I was just like, oh, just like he gets it. He gets the hurt. So sometimes, you know, the things that I judge as being, you know, just a weird way of grieving are not, you know, they're not. It's just different. So I think that's crucial. I encourage you as especially married couples to recognize that your spouse is going to grieve differently and, to give them the space to do that.
As a person who wants to come alongside and comfort, it's really hard to find the right words to say or the right actions. What advice can you give? What brings comfort to someone who has lost someone to suicide so abruptly?
It is such a unique thing that, you know, one thing that brings somebody comfort might upset someone else. Like there's just no set right way. So it really makes people feel pretty awkward. And sometimes that means that you just don't say anything at all. That, like, we need those connections. Embrace the awkward on both sides, whether you are the one grieving or you're the one doing the comforting, embrace the awkward. It's going to be awkward. This is unnatural. Like, this is not at all what God intended for creation and for mankind. So because of that, it is meant to be awkward. It's not meant to be a comfortable experience. So just embrace that awkwardness. Step in. I think, you know, oftentimes it was comforting just having people be present. In the beginning, when we made the first initial calls, within an hour and a half, our house was filled with people. And they just sat around and they prayed with us and prayed for us and prayed for all the people that would be affected by Jonathan's death. Like, that was amazing. And there were people who would just, I'd never see them, but they would just quietly come up and, you know, they had some containers out on our porch and they would put food in. I have one lady who was wonderful and just constantly kept us with water because there were times when I couldn't eat. So, you know, having that hydration was crucial. So it's using the skills that you have, the gifts that God has given you, and just giving what you have. The church, ladies that were in the sewing group said, hey, can we make you a quilt with his clothes? Well, I didn't have a whole lot of his clothes because, you know, he had moved out. And so I said, you know what I really want? I said, people have been actually making comments on his Facebook page, or they had friended me and made comments on my page about memories they had with him and just different thoughts that they had. And I said, I want that. So at the viewing, they put out these blank squares for people to draw pictures, write notes. And so three quilts were made out of these things. Three humongous, beautiful quilts were made out of memories from people, you know, comments and love and scripture and photos and like just all kinds of things. And that, my kids curl up under that. I curl up under it. Like it has just been such a beautiful, you know, precious gift. So use what you have and just, you know, kind of be present in the moment.
I know that anytime you lose someone, the cycle of pain, it doesn't just go away. So I'm sure you have those waves of pain, of the love and the life loss. So how do you move forward, which I think is so cliche, I don't even know how to ask it correctly, but how do you move forward after the loss with suicide?
Yeah. So, you know, going back to the name that I've come to use for my blog and for the ministry, you know, turning the page on suicide. So that was a phrase that I actually said to Jonathan all through his growing up was, do we stop the story here or do we turn the page? Because, you know, there were things, small and big things that he would get stuck on. And I'm a writer, so he knew story structure. Like, he was practically born knowing story structure. So he got it. Like, every hero has a dark day where it's like, my friends have left me. It looks like the enemy's going to win. Like, how do I get past that moment? And I'm like, the only way is you don't know what's going to happen next. And some days I do have worse days. And then some days I'm surprised because I find joy. You have to turn the page. That's it. Like, there really is no, there's no set program. There's no set thing that any of us can do, you know, to turn on any of our circumstances, not just depression or suicide, but the loss of a job or anything. You have to turn the page again and again and keep finding out what happens next. That's really the core. Like, if you walked away with nothing else, that would be the crucial part, is just keep turning that page.
Which leads me to tell our listeners that you do have a website, and it is turningthepageonsuicide.org. And what kind of information can people get there?
Right now I'm in the process of revamping. I am creating a speaker page, so I am available for speaking on depression and suicide. I would love to come if you have an organization that is trying to help with mental health in some way. I would love to come and have a conversation with you, to meet with you. I can adapt my talks to quite a few subject matters. I can speak to motherhood. I can speak to you know, dealing with caretaking, how to comfort, all those things that we've just gone over. I can speak to those things, but I can also share my own personal testimony, which I too struggle with depression. So I know the flip side of it as well. I am gathering resources. If you have a local resource that, and I want to try to create a state-by-state page. So if you have resources that you have found incredibly helpful on the front of fighting depression, suicide, or surviving, survivor groups, I would love to hear about them. So you can email me at turningthepageonsuicide@gmail.com. I would love to have that information. My hope is to utilize writing, because a lot of the people that follow my blog use poetry to kind of get their thoughts and their feelings out, you know, especially the ones that are struggling with depression. And so there is a useful component in beginning, like the psalmist, like King David used to write down his prayers and his psalms. There's something useful about getting those things out in small bits, because especially when you're grieving of this magnitude, you can't usually handle a whole lot of big stuff. Like, I could read a whole entire book and not remember a single bit of it, because you're in shock. But poetry, you can handle little bits and little pieces. So my hope is to create some workshops to help people use writing to help move them towards, you know, turning that page, keeping on turning that page.
And speaking of which, you have utilized some of your journal posts in addition to a lot more. You've created a book called Broken Butterflies, Emerging Through Grief. And it is available on your website and on Amazon and elsewhere?
Yeah, Barnes & Noble. Basically, at this point, anywhere books are sold, you can get it. I am on Ingram Spark. So if you have a book company that you would like to order those, you can get it through there as well. So there are lots of places you can find these books.
And what will people find inside Broken Butterflies?
So Broken Butterflies is a poetry book that also has a journaling quality. So you can journal your thoughts. It is basically kind of walking through the grief that I experienced in basically that first year through poetry. I found even when I couldn't write, something a little bit bigger, I could keep writing poetry to kind of get my thoughts out and process what I was dealing with and experiences. It is not an easy read, but it is a hopeful read. That is what gives me joy is being able to offer hope to people that are really struggling and can't currently see it.
Well, Carissa, you have given a lot of insights and advice. I really appreciate all of your candid thoughts today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Bubble Wrap. I'm your host, Kristen Getze. If you would like to grow in your communications, look me up on the World Wide Web at kristengetze.com. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate it, and share it. Until we wrap next time, may your cup runneth over.